When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, friends, and welcome to an unexpected podcast. I'm Ez.
And I'm Lane.
And you're Lane. Before we started the recording, I was like, I don't even know what you should say, you know, and you were like, well, why don't I just say, and I'm Lane. And that works. It works out for me. So, that's actually Lottie, by the way, just so you guys know.
I'm Lottie Lane.
Lottie Lane.
Say that like five times in a row.
Lottie Lane. Da, 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 da. Hey, didn't you say the other day that you thought that if we combined our names, Ez and Lane, right, we should go as
Elaine.
All right. What was the other option? So it's like Laney?
Oh, wait. No, that was not an option back then, but now it is.
Okay, Laney.
I think Laney is cute.
Yeah. Oh, you think it's cute?
Yeah.
You think we're cute? Oh. Anyway, hey. Friends, you're about to hear a different sort of episode. I wanted to come on and do a quick little introduction just to introduce this and tell you, like, what the heck is this? So this is something we dropped back in the day. We called it Home, all right? H-O-M-E. You'll hear why we called it that here in just a second. We introduced this episode. We get into sort of the great tales. We were going through the great tales, Children of Húrin, Beren and Lúthien, The Fall of Gondolin. Okay. And we never got a chance to finish it. But now that we've gotten through The Hobbit, and we've gotten through Fellowship, Two Towers, Return of the King. Yeah, what's the last book? Return of the King. So we were thinking about going through all of these, and just one by one, we actually did Beren and Lúthien.
That's awesome. I think I got to listen to it after we're done recording this intro.
Yeah, so it was fun. We went through it. We read it. We listened. We just did kind of a one take or whatever. So we're dropping this for you guys to listen to, and then we are going to probably be picking up, if you would like, for us to do these again or to do all three or whatever. We'd be more than willing to. Also, I think the cat's out of the bag here, or the hobbit's out of the hole. We are doing the Silmarillion.
The Silmarillion or the
Silly Marillion? That Marillion got real silly. So we are doing it. Lane posted a picture on our Instagram the other day, and go check it out. Up Talking Tolkien. He is fired up. He's ready to go. He's ready to dive in deep. So after all the Rings of Power stuff, after we got through that whole season, we took a little break, and we're going to be going sort of chapter by chapter through that. You and I have been falling asleep to it almost every night.
I love it. It's awesome. I love the first chapter, though. I don't know. It's just perfect to just drift off and into another world.
It really is, because it's sort of the almost like the
beginning of
mystic
time.
Yeah, beginning of time, singing into existence, and it's awesome. We listen to, I think it's the Martin Shaw, I think is the name of the guy who reads the audiobook version that we listen to, and something about his voice just puts us out.
Yeah.
And it's also retired, but I mean, yeah, we want to kind of listen to it when the daylight's ticking, because, yeah,
I think I actually have to have
things to say about it. So that should be fun. So be looking for that. We're going to be back, I think, next week. We're going to be coming back with an episode. Lane and I, you and I are going to be doing a follow up to your experience for Rings of Power season one.
Mm-hmm.
So we're coming back with that. So it's a little standalone episode. We're going to have your perspective, just because you've never read any of the books. You have no idea.
So very different from your or Lane's perspectives. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very different. So we'll hear that, which will be good. I think that's a good taste. And then from there, we'll do the anniversary. The podcast is coming up, so we're going to be dropping.
Wait, when is the anniversary?
Yeah, it's coming up on Tolkien's birthday.
Wow. So, yeah. That's cool.
It's great, right? So, yeah we'll be doing that. And then from there, we'll be diving into the Silmarillion. So, want to give you guys an update. So, look for an episode next week from Lottie and I. And then you'll look for one from Lane and I, maybe a couple, actually. And then we'll get into these tales of Middle-earth.
Sounds great. Merry Christmas, guys.
Merry Christmas.
Hey, Melons. I'm Lane.
And I'm Ez.
And this is the very first Hobbit's Guide Home. Histories of Middle-earth.
I like what you did, you know, with the home and the histories
you
of
like
Middle-earth.
It's kind of a double meaning there going on.
It works. And this is truly a Hobbit's Guide.
It really is, guys. This is going to be very informal, very laid back, and it's going to be, we wanted to preface this by saying this is going to be an overview. Ezra is familiar with this story. This is my first time reading it in the details in its entirety. So this is very, very fresh for me. And what we plan on doing is, so what we're doing to start this journey is we're taking the Great Tales, right?
Yep.
Is that right?
That's what we're doing.
We're taking Beren and Lúthien, we're taking the Children of Húrin, and we're taking the Fall of Gondolin, and we're giving like an initial reaction to each one. It may be a half an hour, it may be 3.5 hours. And then what we're planning on doing is eventually as the reread continues and evolves, is we will make that a part of, because obviously is you know, an hour and 20 minutes enough time to spend on Beren and Lúthien? No, absolutely not. It's way too interconnected with the other stories of the Silmarillion. It's way too interconnected with...
Yeah, things that are going on in the main series.
That's what I was going to say.
Yep.
But I burped. And so, in true Hobbit fashion, right?
Great.
And so this is just, you know, initial thoughts.
Yeah, it's initial thoughts. I think it's sort of, we decided we would just pull out like, man, what did you think was cool about the story? Hit the major plot points. Do a little background for some of you. And honestly, my goal with this was to be real transparent and just sort of say like, yeah, I've read I'm all the way in the Silmarillion, I'll tell you this, all the way up through Beren and Lúthien.
Wow.
And a little past it. So I've read it all.
That's half the book.
I know, yeah. And so I'm
easy,
about
okay.
three-faced.
Don't be defensive.
About three-fourths of the way through. But I mean, there's so many more things you have. You've got the histories of Middle-earth. You've got the actual lost tales and so on. You know, you've got so much more there.
You even have the adventures of Tom Bombadil.
You do.
Which we're getting into.
You know? So there's a lot. And I just wanted to tell you, I mean, my background, I've read The Silmarillion for the most part. And, you know, I started reading the actual Beren and Lúthien, you know, recently released, you know,
edited
the full,
version.
You know, version of the story. And I think we decided that's just a little too much. Let's hit the Silmarillion version first and just get a, because it's a great story.
Yes.
You know,
and I'm going to be transparent. Here's what I did. I started, because we obviously were timing this for the release of The Fall of Gondolin.
Yeah.
Kind of new edition that Christopher Tolkien has edited and is releasing at the end of August. So we've gotten the other two, right?
Yeah.
Beren and Lúthien came out last year, and oh my gosh, like 10 years ago is when Children of Húrin came out.
Mm-hmm.
So I've started to read Children of Húrin. I've gotten about halfway through, and then I always got distracted by something else, whatever. It's very straightforward. The way he edited that and put it together, pretty easy to read. It's a narrative. Started to read Beren and Lúthien, and it was really, really hard because that story was always changing. That story was always being edited. And in the preface, Christopher Tolkien does a really good job of explaining like how he would find part of the story on the back of a paper in half legible writing that he had to fit in there somehow. And so all that to say, when we go and do the reread through Beren and Lúthien, we'll be using that.
Yep.
But for the first go round, I was like, as I just got to go to the Silmarillion. It's a shorter version, right?
Yeah.
Yes, it is. It's more straightforward. Yes, it is. So that's what I read from. And
And this is, you know, when we get into what happens on the podcast is like this really structure. We have to make sure we do everything in a nice sequence, order, you know, whatnot. Here on Patreon, I think we can, with you guys, do something that's very much informal. And when we sit down and talk about it, it sticks. You know, for us, it sticks. Hopefully for you guys listening, it's a refresher for some of you. Some of you, it's brand freaking new.
Yep.
And that's cool. So what I decided to do was make this very much It's a Hobbit's guide. I mean, how would Hobbits kind of tell this story? And what would, I mean, and we're not talking like Frodo, because Frodo's a pretty, you know, rare as Hobbits go. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So this would be like maybe Sam telling it in The Green Dragon.
Sitting around the pub table is exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah.
I want to start off by saying I've always been hesitant into getting into the Silmarillion. It's always just kind of been something that is intimidating.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And I've always been so in love with just the trilogy or the, you know, the six books of The Lord of the Rings that I haven't really had a desire to get out into it. But let me tell you what, man.
Mm-hmm.
If there is one story to suggest to someone to get them into the Silmarillion, it is Beren and Lúthien.
Yeah.
Now, I realize I say that without the knowledge of any other stories, but it is so connected to what's happening in Lord of the Rings, to characters, to regions, similar plot structure, that it's the key, man. It really is the key. Because before, this is a book I did not want to read.
Yeah, I know.
I read Beren and Lúthien in one day.
Yep.
And now I want to read
the whole thing,
the rest of it. I want to start back at. I even did it. I was like looking through the chapters. I'm like, okay, all right, Thingol and Melian. I was looking through
are they at? What
right? Yeah. But I was looking back into the contents. I'm like, oh my gosh, chapter 4 of Thingol and Melian.
Yeah.
Reading that next, baby.
Yeah,
It just gets you hooked. So, and it's cool, the connection. Obviously, for me, it's big because the connection of Beren to Aragorn.
Yeah.
Not only the connection of like Lúthien and Beren and the love story that parallels Aragorn and Arwen, but also the fact that, you know, Aragorn is descended. He wears the ring of Beren here.
Yep. That's right.
And also Elrond is a descendant of this love story. So it's pretty cool how, you know, and you can see, and Beren is very, very Aragorn. He's a badass.
He is. Yeah, he is.
Badass.
He's got a lot of confidence, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. No fear.
But it's also, I think, a part of it is the
love.
Did I go cross-eyed? Did I actually go cross-eyed? It's a part of the Galadriel chapter that she's still got me in a daze.
He's transforming into a vampire.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
That what happened? No, so it's the idea that he's like he's in love.
Yeah.
And it's that power that's kind of like he's his confidence. He was already kind of confident guy, but now he's like, I can do anything and I will do anything for your hand.
One of my favorite parts, and this obviously jumping right into it, one of my favorite parts is when Thingol says, this is the price for my daughter. And he's like, wow, seriously? You want me to go get a jewel? Elves ask just for like jewels for the hands of their most precious daughters. I'll get it for you. Don't worry about it. I expected a little more, actually, but I'll get the job done.
Yeah.
And it was just like that it's a great point. He is incredibly confident.
Because none of them have been able to do it. They can't get the Silmarils.
Wouldn't even dare.
No, it's something that, So now I wanted to back up just a little bit. Okay, is that cool?
Beep, beep, beep.
Okay, cool. So we're backed up. Now that we're back here, I want to explain, I guess, just real quickly. I say it Iluvatar.
I say Iluvatar.
Iluvatar.
Which is wrong.
I don't know.
Iluvatar is right, I believe.
It's just the audiobook that I listen to, which I need help with all those pronunciations. Yeah. So I'll say Iluvatar is Eru Iluvatar, or Iluvatar is the is God. You know, he has created this world. And, you know, the hierarchy, if you don't understand, I'm so sorry if you're someone who's like super savvy in this, but we're making a Hobbit's Guide.
This is a Hobbit's Guide.
Okay. Yep. Gosh dang it. And so he's God, and underneath him you have the Valar. Okay, so you have these beings who, you know, they're singing songs, my friend. You know, Iluvatar sings a song, and they're singing the world into being. You know, they're creating. You've got, really what I'll do is I'll put two people in your mind here. You've got Iluvatar, God, and then beneath him he's created the Valar. And two of those names that stick out among the Valar are Manwë and Melkor. And they're like kind of brothers, you know, imagine them being the tippy top here. Some of the first created.
Romulus and Remus.
Yeah, there you go. And one is good, one is bad.
Yeah.
To make it straightforward.
Cain and Abel.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Manwë is good, lord of the skies, king of the Valar. He's a boss, okay? Melkor is strong, knowledgeable. He sings a song of discord. He tries to disrupt the tune, different things, and whatnot. And he basically is, he turns into someone you the elves name him Morgoth. And so he becomes the Dark Lord Morgoth in Middle Earth. So there's that bit for you. So just to set this the stage here. So when we say, I think it's important that you know that Morgoth is super badass. I mean, yeah. he's the tippy top here.
The way you put it, you said he makes Sauron look like a little wuss.
You know what? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, because, he basically takes Sauron, who is... So underneath the Valar, you've got many... There were like, I think you can number the Valar. I think there was like... there's a number of them. I can't remember. 12 or 14, something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Well, they actually, in the beginning of the Silmarillion, they list like all of them and their spouses and things like that. So, and then underneath them, you've got the Maiar or Maia. So Maiar being plural, Maia being singular. And for example, Gandalf is one of the Maiar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And he's a part of the five Astari who are ascent, you know, to Middle Earth. Sauron is also a Maiar, you know. And Belrogs are, exactly. Maiar. They're corrupted by Morgoth. You know, some of those Belrogs have names, you know, and things. So it's just interesting to kind of understand the hierarchy there.
Yes, it is.
You know, and so as we move forward, there's that. Now, they actually go about Middle Earth, do their own thing. There are no elves when you first start in this whole world. Mm. There are no dwarves. There are no men, etc. It is just the Valar and the Maiar. They go into the world. There's more to it, again, and they do their thing. Mm-hmm. You know, Lynn, they have a good time down there. But it's kind of like, it's actually, they're not, I forget who it is who wakes the dwarves. He creates the dwarves because they're like anxious for the firstborn, the elves, to come. You know, they didn't know when they would come. And they actually have a great big war, I think, actually with... I think that's beforehand. I could be mixing this up, but they have a war with Morgoth or Melkor at some point. And then they have several back and forth with him. But anyways, the point we want to focus on though is when, I bring the dwarves up because I always think it's interesting that they were actually the seven, the fathers of the dwarves were created. The elves are there. They're just asleep. Yeah. You know, they haven't awoke yet and they have not come to.
The dwarves are created first.
They're created and and they get Iluvatar's blessing, you know, and but he says, but they need to go back to sleep. They're alive. They're
wow.
I forget. Gosh dang it! I wasn't ready to talk about this, but
that's all right.
He has to put them back to sleep because they will not come before his firstborn. You know, he's
whoa.
Like. And he kind of foresaw strife.
So is that where some of the division comes between the two?
And he says, you know, that they're kind of his adopted sons, you know, his adopted children versus his true-born children.
Thor and Loki kind of thing.
Yeah, because he doesn't actually, you know, one of his Valar create them. You know?
Wow.
So, which is interesting, right?
Wow, that's so interesting.
But anyways, more on that later. We'll have to dive into the names and get it all straight later. okay, so the elves. When they wake up, I think it's important. There's a piece here. Tolkien Gateway is a great guide to all of this. But the first elves awoke in Middle-earth near the Sea of Halkar. And Orome, he's the huntsman of the Valar. And actually, each of the Valar have like these traits. Mm-hmm. You know,
kind of like Greek gods.
Yeah, kind of. Manways of the sky.
Yep.
You know, and you've got Orome, who is a huntsman. You've got Olmo, who's of the seas. You've got Yavanna and so on.
Yep.
So,
yep.
Okay. So he actually is traveling throughout Middle Earth. He discovers the elves and he makes this bond of friendship with them, actually. And later, as the Valar decide to call the first children of Iluvatar to Valinor, regarding this call with suspicion, Orome selected three elves to follow him to Aman and report back what they had seen. So the elves, actually, Melkor is also kind of like keeping tabs on them, and he sees that they've awakened as well. And he starts to spread rumors that the Valar and that these other beings are not good and that they're going to take you somewhere. It's sort of like he corrupts the already before But once they see Orome, they're like, well, he has the light of Amon in his eyes and all these different things. And so they, some of them do trust him. And actually three, they call them ambassadors, are taken to Valinor to meet with the Valar, which is kind of neat. So, and those ambassadors later become the three kings. So the elves are kind of divided into these three groups. Mm-hmm. So the three elven ambassadors were Ingwe, Finwë, and Elwë. And Elwë, I didn't know this until just before we were kind of starting this.
Quarterback for the Broncos.
Quarterback right. for Elwë, you know.
Sorry. First name John.
Right, it is. Thingol in this story, King okay. Thingol.
Yeah.
His name changes, I guess. He actually is Elwë. I don't know if I'm actually saying it right. Now
I, no, I think that's
saying,
right. No, I think you're right.
I'm thinking John Elwë.
That's right.
Oh, that's cool. It's,
how's it spelled?
E-L-W-E with yeah. the, you know.
The thing.
The eyes. So anyways, they would they later become the kings of the three factions for which the elf race was split into. So there's a sundering,
Cool. Yeah. You
know, that happens. And I think it's neat to pick on some of these characters so you understand the dynamic in Beren and Lúthien just a little bit more. So enamored by the wonders of the Valinor, Finwë and his other two companions returned towards Middle-earth and attempted to convince their respective peoples to follow them back to Amon. Those who agreed to follow Orome, who's one of the Valar, received the name Eldar. So they're the Eldar. They're the ones who did follow him into Valinor. Among them were Finwë's people, who would eventually become known as the Noldor. They later became students of, the Smith. I can't pronounce his name. Aule, something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, A-U-L-E with the eyes. I don't know. I need to listen to the book again. They have such good Martin yeah. Shaw, is that his name?
Yeah.
Something like that.
I don't know. I haven't listened to it, but yeah, I know.
It's pretty cool. Yeah. I got the CD version. It's actually...
Oh, that's sweet.
I got the old CDs and everything. I had to a special order it.
No way.
Yeah, and
is
I played
it. Not on Audible?
No way.
See, there you go.
Yeah. And some people have uploaded it to YouTube, so if you want to listen to it,
yeah.
It is the legit version.
That's super helpful. They've been coached in how to, you know, from Elven linguists to yeah. know how to say these...
Exactly.
It's crazy words.
It's great.
Yeah, yeah.
So the three ambassadors, right, they come mm-hmm. back. Finwë had the most success convincing his people to go to Valinor. Mm-hmm. And he has an elder son named Fëanor. And he's that great. He creates the Silmarillions, basically.
Okay.
He creates them. He's the greatest craftsman among the elves of the Valinor.
Okay.
So cool stuff, right?
Yes.
So I think that's kind of the setup here. You have the Teleri, there's different factions, right? There's three different factions. The Teleri don't actually, they struggle to get all the way west. They kind of get, we said this in this past week's episode, that they kind of get slowed up. They get enamored with the things in Middle Earth and they want to go, they long to stay there. Like mm-hmm. they kind of want to, they don't want to go.
They love
west.
Middle Earth.
Yeah. And so that actually, Thingol, he kind of, when he stays and rules them, he was at one point Elwë, and they become known as the Teleri, and they mm-hmm. don't actually, you know, go back to Valinor. Mm-hmm. And as you said, he ends up marrying what's her name, Melian, mm-hmm. right? Who is a Maiar? Mm-hmm. Crazy! An yeah. elf actually marries, you know, one of the Maia.
Batting above his average.
Yeah,
hitting above his weight.
He is actually. So I think that's pretty neat. It's part of the beauty of Lúthien, right? Mm-hmm. So is she half...
What is she?
Right. She's half elf,
yeah.
half Maiar. What is she? She's yeah. something different. You
well,
know?
That would explain the power of her singing as well. You know,
absolutely.
I'm hearing about this history. You're talking about how the world was sung into being. And I'm thinking about how she has a way of... Well, she has a way, really, of her songs influence the future.
Yeah.
Right? She almost kind of continues that... singing of into being.
That's right.
You know, it's funny, you read it in a synopsis, and that's how I read it first. I was like, how silly is that? Come on. But you read it within the context of the story, and there's details that you can't put in a
synopsis.
Right. That flush it out more and make it that much more powerful.
Yep.
Well, that makes sense, the power of song, man.
Yeah. So I just thought there's your setup. So
yeah.
So one of our characters is Lúthien, and her father is Thingol, mm-hmm. formerly known as Elwë, mm-hmm. who was one of the ambassadors.
That's great.
And you know, they're of the Teleri elves. If I get any of this wrong, you guys just let me know. I'm just kind of spitballing here, and I'm new to this as well too. Yeah. So, you know, and then Melian is her mother.
Yeah.
So there you go.
It's awesome.
That starts us off. So we get to learn more about her because she's got a lot of, she's a boss.
Okay. Yes, she is. Yeah, big
so
time.
Where do we jump in here, my friend?
Well, what so, do you want? How do you want to do this? You just want to do major bullet points that
big takeaways,
mile markers.
I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Big takeaways. We'll just get into the beginning of the story.
Okay.
It had me hooked from the very beginning. You've got a small group of men, and it was big for me that it started off with men because mm-hmm. elves are great. I love elves. They're cool.
Right.
And actually, of all the elves, I think Luthien is the most attractive, maybe because she's, like you just said, not totally elf.
Yeah, right.
She's also Maiar as well,
yeah,
right?
That's right.
So she's elevated a little bit and different and kind of, in a way, unpredictable. You know what I mean?
She is.
That's kind of like Gandalf.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
I mean, she's got a mind of her own.
Right.
She's right. About her own. Yeah.
She's
well, because they were there to help. The Maiar were there to help the Valar to create things and to take care of things and stuff like that. So they very much care about the world and the way in which Melkor, you know, Morgoth is destroying things and the shadow that he brings on stuff. So she's got a bit of that in her as well.
Yep,
I think.
Absolutely. So anyway, it was really cool to see men as kind of the center of this.
Yeah.
You know, also, I got to read the opening. I swear I wasn't going to do this, but the opening is so beautiful. Among the tales of sorrow and of ruin that come down to us from the darkness of those days, there are yet some in which amid weeping, there is joy. And under the shadow of death, light that endures. So right off the bat, you know, this is going to be a sad story.
Yes.
But there's goodness that shines through it. There's beauty within it. So cool. I mean, it's like, what a poetic way to get you into a story, too.
Yeah.
It's like reading some kind of ancient, I don't know, epic love ballad or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
So anyway, basically, you've got Barahir, who is retreating. They were defending Dorthonion, where Morgoth had pursued him during this big battle, the Dagger Bragalloch. Is that right?
Yeah, you're right.
So they withdrew to this lake area. It was kind of this secluded lake area called Tarn Eiluin. Eiluin. I don't know how to pronounce that. But they were kind of hidden. It was almost like this little pocket that Morgoth couldn't get to.
Yeah.
Kind of gave up the hunt, pretty much. But he set Sauron onto it, right? He said, you know what? You go take care of them. I can't figure out where they are. Get these guys somehow.
Yeah.
So very interesting, this pitiable character of Gorlim, right? He was the husband of Eilinel. So there's the tie-in there is that before he went on this battle, his home was destroyed. Right?
Yeah.
And his wife disappeared and vanished. He didn't know if she had been killed or if she was taken captive. So while they're in this area, by this Tarn Eiluin, he's close enough to his home that what he does is he goes out at night and revisits his house in hopes that, you know, maybe he'll find his wife or find some clue or just maybe out of some need of comfort, right?
Right, yeah.
So Sauron sees this.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And sets a trap for him.
Yeah.
And he goes one night and thinks that he sees this light and he thinks that he sees his wife.
Yeah.
And he approaches, and as he gets closer, the light disappears, the figure vanishes, and he feels the strong hands of orcs upon his shoulders.
Yeah.
Boom, taken captive. So obviously I'm abridging this, right? I'm putting in my own words. So if
I get something
a little bit off, this is just my impression, my takeaway. So Gorlim is tortured by Sauron. Tortured.
Yes.
Okay. And Sauron tells his ruffians says, and his orcs says, do whatever you gotta do. Get this guy to give up the location of Barahir because I want his butt.
Yep.
Well, so
he was one of the only people still left kind of defending that region against Morgoth and stuff. And his numbers had dwindled quite a bit. So I don't know.
So he gets this, eventually they're saying like, you know, hey, we know what you're doing at this house. We know you want your wife back. You tell us where they are, we'll get your wife back. Okay. We'll give you what you really desire. And so only after a lot of torturing and rough treatment and like, just torment. He agrees that if, you know, if he can have his wife back, he'll tell what happened. So he goes to Sauron, and this gave me freaking chills, dude.
Yeah,
it was crazy, because he was like, you know, what price would you barter with me?
Yeah,
you know, he says to have Ilanel back.
Yeah,
right. And he says, "Wow, what a cheap price for such treachery." Essentially, Sauron says, you know, which is crazy.
It's crazy.
So he tells him, he gives them up where they are. Sauron says, "Yeah, I'll reunite you with her. She's dead, so I'm gonna kill you." Wow. So he, you know, gives him. It says, I think, like it torments him in such a way that is gives him a really, really evil, like nasty death.
Death, yeah.
So makes it painful for him. So poor Gorlim, you know, did his best, but his love was his weakness, which is very interesting, because this is a theme that comes up again later.
Right. Yeah.
So anyway, they take Barahir and his men, they kill them. And sort of the silver lining of this is that his son Beren was out kind of spying the enemy, right? His father had sent him. I wonder why. I can't remember if it says why, but it's just almost this divine, like, fate thing playing.
Yeah.
Maybe Eru Iluvatar, sort of like, I don't know, Gandalf, whoever's in control of all this stuff. Yeah, I don't know, the Maiar. So he had been out spying the enemy, you know, and he has this dream, right?
Yeah.
Where he sees crows, carrion, that were dripping in blood, and sees the wraith of Gorlim come to him and tell him what he had done.
Yeah.
So this is what I did. Go back to Barahir and please warn him of his danger. So he speeds. It's almost kind of like, it reminds me of almost Gladiator in a way, right?
Yeah.
He's speeding back to his home to try and save his father and the men. And, you know, he gets there and he sees the crows fly away, and they're in the trees almost mocking him, like he's too late kind of a thing. So he raises a mound upon his father and buries him, and vows to have revenge. So it's awesome. Like his, oh God, what was it called? His woodsmanship or something was so good that he was able to, he pursued these orcs, right? He's going to have vengeance.
Yeah.
So he pursues them, and his woodsmanship was so good that he was able to sneak up upon them without them even noticing.
Yeah.
So you almost imagine he's moving kind of like ghost, like a wraith-like. Yeah, like a ranger.
Yeah.
Exactly. And he hears the orc chieftain kind of bragging about how he had killed Barahir. Holds up his hand. Says, here he is. Here's his hand.
Mm-hmm. He does.
And it's the Ring of Barahir. What was it called before? Was it his father's name before it was Ring of Barahir? He called it something else, guys. I'm sorry. I can't.
Yeah, let me look real quick.
Can't remember.
We said we'd do this. We look it up here.
Ring of Felagund.
Felagund, yep.
So,
Was an elven artifact.
Is that Finrod?
Yeah, it was an elven artifact that was originally given by Finrod.
To Barahir. And was it part of the, part of his oath, the oath that Finrod fulfilled by protecting or helping Barahir or helping Baron?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, cool. So that comes into play later. I kind of missed that. That's sweet. So he sees the ring, goes in, kills that chieftain, gets the ring back, and then is able to evade him and run off. What an amazing opening. It got me sucked right in. I was all about it. You've got this story of vengeance. He goes and avenges his father's death. There's this epic, you know, what is this ring? What is this all about? Of course, we know that the Ring of Barahir sits upon Aragorn's finger in the Lord of the Rings.
Dude, that's crazy, man. So, okay, so go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. So it's just, it's these cool, it drew me in immediately because I love Aragorn. And I'm like, these are his ancestors. This is where this ring came from. Now I got to see the rest of the journey. I got to see what happens next.
Right.
It's just amazing.
So
what were you gonna say?
No, it's the reason that Barahir gets the ring is because he saves Finrod's life, you know, and so he gives that to him as this, you know, kind of an eternal, like, you know, gratitude to his
token of
friendship between the two, and it actually says not just Barahir but the house of Barahir.
Yeah,
and that he would honor, you know,
which comes up later.
What I'm thinking, if you take it all the way to Aragorn, who is left of Finrod's line? I don't know. I don't know. I'm just throwing out questions right now that I would want to look up later myself. So
dude.
I'll do it while you continue. Wow. On. But yeah.
Yeah, so he kind of wanders in exile, I guess, for about 4 years. He journeys in and near Dorthonion, which is actually Darth Vader's signature dish he brings into potlucks on the Death Star, Dorthonion.
Mm-hmm.
It's like an onion soup.
It looks like wow, thanks. Okay. Looks like his line doesn't necessarily continue. I thought that he had children.
Pretty cool though, regardless.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, sorry. I'm just going through the plot point. You stop me and take over whenever you want.
Yeah, you're fine.
It's amazing. This
is really neat.
Yeah. And he earned renowned with his desperate deeds. He builds a reputation in this 4 years out in the wilderness. I think at one point it says, I'm going to try and just go from notes and memory. I don't even, I could, if I start reading the book, I'm going to want to read everything. So I'm going to stay away from it.
Yep.
And we'll save that for the reread.
Yep.
But he even like vows, it's crazy. He's out here living in nature with animals. It says he begins to talk to the creatures and the birds,
mm-hmm.
gets to know them as like, it's like his only relations, only family. It's like the birds and the beasts that are around him, well, his only company. And during that time, he vows to and sets himself to eat no flesh.
Yeah.
So here you go. Vegan next door. This is what we're talking about. This is for you. He becomes, becomes a vegan. He's eating plants only.
Yeah.
So I thought that was so cool that he had this connection with these animals so deeply that he couldn't bring himself to kill any of them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just cool. It's that's a Tolkien thing that's thrown in there. That's really, really neat. So anyway, out here doing crazy stuff, talking to the birds and beasts, eating grass. And after a while, he comes to Doriath seeking refuge.
Yeah.
And this in the forest of Neldoreth is where he sees Luthien, who he calls
hot.
Yeah. And the song he calls her Tenuviel, which means nightingale.
Right.
Because he's like, I think it said that he was like dumbfounded. She sang this song and it was so beautiful that, and then she just kind of vanishes and he doesn't know, he's like left, like just doesn't know what to say, doesn't know what to do. Was this a dream?
Yeah.
Was this real? He's just really beside himself at being in the presence of Luthien.
Man.
Yeah. So they fall in love.
They do. This is where that Romeo and Juliet connection comes in. He's, love at first sight type of situation.
And he's not really supposed to be there.
No.
Either.
No, he's definitely sneaking around, isn't he?
Yeah. And like, yeah. Okay. So,
because she's not outside of their kingdom. He's actually in theirs.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. He's a wanderer. He goes goes in and out. So they spend some time together. They're obviously in love, right?
Yep.
We've got this other character who kind of comes into it, Daron, who is kind of the
minstrel.
He's kind of the Kokoum to Luthien's Pocahontas kind of deal. He's the dude who longs for Luthien, but he's taking the wrong path.
Yeah.
So he spies on Luthien and Beren and reports to Thingol what's going on. So Thingol obviously becomes pretty mad.
Yeah. Yep.
And orders them be taken to Menegroth. So they come before him. He meets Beren.
Yeah.
Right? And they kind of have this icy exchange. Pretty much Beren comes out and says, I love your daughter and I want her. You know? I want her hand.
Yeah.
And he says, well, you're going to have to do something for me. You're going to have to go get a Silmaril. You know, something. I think he just thinks of the most ridiculous thing ever. Got to go get a Silmaril from the crown of Morgoth.
Well,
bring it back in your hand.
He's actually, he brings up the oath in which he wants to just kill him on the spot.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. He does.
Right.
That's
right. And there's some kind of oath that keeps him from killing him.
Well, and even just Luthien's words, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't she make him promise to not?
Oh, does she?
I think so.
Well, I know Melian's council. Let's see. She reminds him of the there was some someone will tell us, I'm sure, the all the promise that was made. You know, there was something that hindered him. And I don't have the book in front of me. Hopefully, maybe
here you go. Here it is.
What do you got?
It was. Then the king was filled with anger for Luthien he loved above all things, setting her above all the princes of the elves. Whereas mortal men he did not take even into his own service. Obviously, I thought very lowly of men. Therefore, he spoke in grief and amazement to Luthien. But she would reveal nothing until he swore an oath to her that he would neither slay Beren nor imprison him. So it was just a promise to her.
Okay. I thought it was something of older. Yep.
Yeah. So she just says, promise you won't. He makes that promise. And yeah, that's it. I forgot that he wants to kill him.
Yep.
And because of that promise, he says, and because I love my daughter so much, I won't.
Yeah.
But he makes that known. He's like, I would kill you if I could.
Jeez, man.
Yeah.
I mean, hold on a second here. You know, you're hooking up with a Maiar.
Yeah, really.
Batting out of your own league.
Really?
Okay.
Exactly.
Come on now. You can't see where this guy's coming from?
Exactly, dude. Have a little sympathy. He is you.
Yeah, he is.
They?
Yeah, exactly.
And there's also this interesting I'm going to get stuck in the book now. It's going to go too long as...
No, I don't care. Out of it. I don't care if it goes 2 or 3 hours. I don't care.
But Beren and Melian have this interesting... like they have these glances and looks between them.
Yes.
There's this interesting connection there. And she kind of senses a deeper fate. She says, she seemed to him that were, no, it seemed to him that words were put into his mouth. Fear left him and pride of the eldest house of men returned to him. And he said, never mind. He talks about his fate and, well, that's right, because he insults his lineage.
Yeah.
Baron's lineage. Yeah, he says, hang on a second. You know, I come from a long line of men who've done incredible things. And that's where he says he's earned death. Oh, my gosh. It's just crazy. Okay, no, we can't get sucked in, dude, because this will be for the reread. There's just so much to unpack.
No, yeah.
But anyway, yeah.
Well,
Melian,
I just put up her page here real quick just to kind of give us a little context. So she foresees that war was coming to this land, right?
Yeah.
Melian warned her husband, Thingol. So
she says he's pretty much sealed his fate either way.
Yeah, either way.
You lose your daughter or you lose your land.
Yeah. So in turn, Thingol ordered the delving of the strong fortress in their kingdom. So they're setting up his kingdom here. You know, and so on. So anyway, she's always kind of warning him, and it talks about...
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy 2, get 2 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This in Beren and Luthien, that she, warns him of these things that are gonna come. Yeah. You're damned either way.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
So
incredible.
It's really neat, actually.
Again, that's a very like Galadriel thing to do.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Like the kings are kind of more, not rash, but they just come out and say it, and there's wisdom from their queen.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Sorry. There's just so much.
No, dude. It's dude. I'm not like I can't. For me to say this as I almost said to you today.
Yeah.
That I love Beren and Luthien almost as much as, and I couldn't even finish the sentence.
Yeah. I know.
Because it is so good, and there is so much to unpack. But there we could do that forever. And plus, I also want to read. I don't want to take it too much out of context from my point of view because I haven't read the other stories in the Silmarillion, and I mean, one thing affects the other, and so I want to be able to have that full context too when we go back through it. But anyway,
dude, here's something real quick. So
yeah, give me.
So with Melian, she during the war with the great enemy Morgoth, right? When he comes to their land, she uses her power to guard and defend it. With a protection called List Melian, or the Girdle of Melian. And their kingdom was known as, I forget how to pronounce it, Dorioth?
Yeah, Dorioth. Dorioth. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah.
The land of the fence. Okay.
Whoa.
Yeah, this prevented anyone.
Again, the names. It's all in the names of Tolkien.
Yeah. This prevented anyone less powerful than Melian, anyone less powerful, from entering the kingdom.
Wow.
However, with the foresight of Amaya, she predicted that one day someone more powerful would be able to enter. When Beren arrived as foretold, she counseled King Thingol.
Is that what the glance was?
Yeah. So she counseled King Thingol. Against sending Beren to search for a Silmaril, which would eventually lead to Doriath's ruin. This was one of the many instances in which she proved, through her wisdom and powers of foresight, to be wiser than her husband and an effective queen of her land. The great evil wolf, which we're going to get to, I say Karkaroth.
Karkaroth.
Yeah, however you say it. Also passed the girdle. As the power of the Silmaril let him. So just very interesting tidbit on her. So she's trying to counsel, you know, him, and it's, but she's also very not, she's protective, but at the same time, you make your own, you know.
Sounds like another Maiar.
Call,
I know.
Call your own shot.
That sounds like Gandalf, doesn't it? I'll give you advice, but you do what
you think is best.
Not controlling.
Yep.
Man. Okay. Wow. What are we doing here? Where are we?
So anyways, back to the to the story. So he's still before King Thingol. Yeah. To get the gist of it, he is sent to go get a Silmaril.
Right.
End of story.
And he's going to go alone.
Yeah, he's going to. Right. Well, actually, he decides to go hit up Finrod.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And so he knows that he actually kind of does. I think he has this facade of confidence while he's there, and it's sort of like trying to impress this girl's
Luthien,
father.
For sure. When you're in love, you got no fear.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on.
Like, and then when he leaves her presence, it's sort of like despair kind of sets in, like, oh, how am I gonna do this?
What did I get myself into?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he seeks out Finrod.
Yep, that's right.
Which was, so his father had saved him, had saved Finrod. Mm-hmm. And so that's where the ring comes into play. Mm-hmm. You know, and
This kingdom is kind of Nargothrond, is that right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Super interesting to me because Finrod's in charge, right?
Yep.
But you also have, we have these two characters that come into Celegorm and Curufin, who also kind of have power.
Yep.
Right? And they have, they have their own, it's almost like political, like they have their own parties that support them.
Yes.
The majority support Finrod. But you've got Celegorm and Curufin who are vying, and you were telling me that they're the sons of Fëanor?
Of Fëanor, yeah.
Okay, and so we skip to it. We learn that they secretly, they just want to outlast every other powerful elf and king and
they do
gain ultimate power.
Well, you know, the idea too
they're
is
playing
that,
chess.
So Fëanor was, as I mentioned at the beginning, he creates the Silmarils, okay? So their father creates the Silmarils.
Okay.
So they are obsessed. They swear an oath, and there's a lot to
and
this.
And they're the rightful, if anyone's going to get them, they should get them. They even say them. That too, don't they?
They because belong their father to their was, family.
Right.
And so anyways, you know, he actually created the Palantir, the Palantir,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
He created those, you know, he creates these things from the lamps, you know, or the trees, is it the lamps or the tree? The trees. They're over in Valinor. So anyways, his sons are super obsessed with getting these things. And
dude, okay, sorry. And another connection, Curufin is the father of Celebrimbor.
Oh, is he really?
Who makes all the rings.
Wow, that's cool.
So these guys make really important stuff.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they're that's their thing.
The makers, know? Okay.
Yeah. So anyways, when he goes to seek out Finrod, you know, who's this other king, Elven king. Mm-hmm. These other guys are kind of, like they're a big deal. Like you said, there's factions of support and stuff, but
they're trying to dissuade from helping Beren.
Yeah, they are hellbent on getting the Silmarils however they can, returning them, defeating Morgoth. That's their big thing.
Yeah.
So they'll do anything.
Yeah.
They're kind of a wild card,
yeah.
you know, as elves go.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, he seeks Finrod out. Finrod goes and tries to find some support. I think they only get like, what?
Ten guys?
Yeah.
10 guys.
Crazy.
Yeah. So Finrod takes his crown off and gives it to Orodreth, his nephew, while they're gone. So he's kind of set up as this temporary king while he goes off. Because, yeah. I mean, they don't know if they're going to come back either.
Yeah.
You know, they know what they're about to do is really dangerous.
Know? I mean, not to jump way ahead.
Probably
here,
not.
I've always been obsessed with Glorfindel.
Glorfindel! Really? I had no idea.
Glorfindel!
Didn't know you liked him.
Because he's because he's resurrected. You know, I've always thought that's really cool.
Yeah.
And not to skip to one of my big takeaways from this is that Finrod is resurrected. They're the only two who actually will walk again and are given that life again.
Yeah, that's true. Holy crap. Yeah.
So because of their great deed and what they did.
Right. And fulfilling, you know, like for Finrod, it's fulfilling that promise. That
promise. Following through on these things, you know. And so
God, how good is a story?
I know. It separates him from the others. It's great. It's fantastic.
And this is why, as a little plug here, this is why Amazon needs to go this direction with this TV show.
Dude, yeah.
This could be a whole season.
I know. Oh my gosh, dude. Can you imagine? There's so much more they can do with the Silmarillion. There's so much they can do. Yeah. So.
And are you hungry for this kind of stuff? Because I am.
I am very
hungry.
It's
new. It's fresh. But it informs what we already have. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
So let's see here. What do we got?
Oh, this was so cool, dude. They find the orc pack.
Yep.
Kill them. And then they take all their stuff and they take on the guise of these orcs.
Yep.
So shape-shifting. If you're into shape-shifting, this story has it too. I don't know why this caught me. I didn't expect them to do this. It caught me off guard.
Right.
And it was such a cool little like magical thing.
Yep.
So they go forward and they're going to this...
Sauron's Isle. Yeah.
Not where you want to go on vacation. Sounds lovely, but very, very hot.
Yeah.
But they don't trick Sauron. Sauron... Dude, this... And the other thing I love about the story is Sauron is so kind of... In The Lord of the Rings... He's a subtle threat, right?
Mm-hmm.
His physical presence is gone. It's his spirit and his gnawing away through the ring that's there, and it's his armies that are left over.
Yeah.
Here we get to really know Sauron.
Yes.
He is an asshole.
Yep.
Massive asshole. No. Masshole. So he can see right through them, knows something's different about them because of the way they move. And the song, they sang a song that was also revealing of their true identity.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Finrod is singing a song of concealment.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Well, again, the power of these songs,
Do you know what this makes me think of? Do you think of the chapter that this makes me think of? This makes me think of Gandalf at the top of the stairs speaking words of command.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. And like using spells.
Yep.
And the other person was on the other side also speaking spells. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's a battle of
magic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a rap battle up in there. You know?
Word, dude. Throwing you down. Know?
Yeah.
So Celeborn.
Yeah.
Well, I don't agree with Gimma, don't. So.
But anyways, it's just kind of a neat, different way of conflict.
Yeah.
You know, and it starts here with Finrod. It'll continue with Tenubial, with Luthien. So,
yeah. Yeah. And so eventually Sauron wins. He asks them their purposes and their names. They won't tell him. I think it even says that they were stricken naked.
Yeah.
And they all of a sudden, like, this fear came over them. Like, oh, crap. We're in for it.
Yep.
And then he, you know, he puts them into the pits to be eaten by...
This is werewolves.
Werewolf.
There was a werewolf.
A werewolf.
Yeah.
A pretty big deal.
Yeah.
Who eats them kind of one by one.
Crazy.
And still, they did not reveal themselves.
No, they did not.
So these 10 companions were the best people to pick.
Yeah. I think he saves Finrod because he senses something about him.
He knows something's up with him. You're right.
Yeah.
He's going to be last.
And I think it's when they go to take Beren, Finrod breaks his chains.
Yep.
And talk about a beast mode.
I know.
You know, and
fulfills his oath.
Yeah. Doesn't he kill the werewolf?
He does, but he dies in the process. Yes.
Yeah.
And actually, before that, we jump back to Luthien, right?
Yep. For sure.
Goes to ask Melian what's going on and learns that Beren is in danger, and she knows that she's got to go save his butt.
Yeah.
Which is the part I love the most.
Yeah.
She is the hero of the story.
She is.
She is a enchantress, man.
Yeah.
She's amazing.
She is.
So powerful.
She goes to rescue him. And
who betrays her again? But Darren.
No, this old minstrel here. He wants a piece.
Maybe he should work more on his musical abilities.
Dude, it's crazy because he did play for her while she danced.
That's true.
You know, he was there with her this whole time, and then
so it hurt even deeper, didn't it?
Yeah, perhaps maybe he foresaw way before Baron ever shows up that he's closest to her. You know, and he felt special in that way. Because his ending is sad.
It is sad. He kind of wanders off and
he goes east.
Yeah.
Ends up by like a dark pool and just
singing sad songs. And
to the end of his days.
Touching himself. Well, so, consoling himself. That's what I meant.
That's
guys.
What you meant. Yeah.
So, anyway, she's
imprisoned though. Luthien is imprisoned in the big treehouse is what I call it.
That's right. That's right. Thingol sets up a house in the up with the Ewoks and this giant treehouse on the these tall. What are the trees? They're just three trunks, but they remind me of like Malorn kind of type tree. They're giant, right?
They're huge, special huge. Trees, yeah.
And their branches don't start growing until like extreme heights.
Yep.
So they're just these giant, what's that part called? Trunks.
There you go.
And puts her up there. And so this is also kind of crazy. So she's up there and the ladder's taken up, and the only time she sees anyone is when they come and give her what she needs and then like food and everything, and they leave. So she does this crazy weird thing with her hair,
mm-hmm.
right? Where she lets it grow.
Yeah.
And she pulls this Rapunzel thing where she lets it down and, okay, I can't remember exactly, but she lets it down and the ends of it have some kind of magical thing that put the elves to sleep. And then does she pull it up and use it? Is that what she uses as her like invisibility thing?
I don't know. Yeah, she has like some, but how does she actually get down?
That dude, I don't freaking know.
It doesn't actually tell you how she got down. It doesn't really say. It's implied.
Right.
That she uses her hair to get down.
Right. Crazy. So this hair is a versatile weapon she's got.
Yes, it is.
It's not the last time she'll use it either.
Right.
So, she uses that to get away. She escapes Doriath and flees for the island in search of Baron.
Yeah.
In the forest as she's leaving, she meets Huon.
Oh, good for her.
Huon the Hound.
Yep.
Who is...
Good doggy.
Dude, no joke, my favorite character.
Me too.
And the whole time I was thinking...
How many times is he allowed to speak?
Three times.
Dude, let me tell you.
Something with the number three, bro.
Dude, and the fact that he has to pick those times...
I know!
Throughout his whole life, he hadn't spoken.
You know what it's like? It's like the three wishes in Aladdin.
Yeah, yeah. It's
choose them carefully.
Yep. Make them count.
And he had saved him for this.
He did, and he
could have used them when he was a pup and said, "Give me some."
He even really just uses two, and we'll get to the third one, which is like,
"Yeah, it's art. See you later, I love you."
Yeah. So
wow. But I thought of Arwen when I was reading about Huon.
I did too.
Especially when she's taken captive by Kelegorm and Curufin, which happens next. They're whatever. Kelegorm falls in love with her and pretty much says, "I'm going to hold her for ransom until Thingol, not ransom, but I'm going to make Thingol promise that we can be together,
and
we can
wed. Be wed. Yeah.
And he's not the only one who falls in love with her. Huon, as soon as he sees her.
Has a connection with
yes,
her.
Yes, yeah. And he, mm-hmm. it talks about when she's imprisoned there and held captive, he would lay at her just at her cell and keep her company.
Now, wait a second. Did he speak? Is this the first speaking? Oh, let me pull him up real quick.
Ooh, good question.
Because he speaks to, I know the second time he speaks. I'm trying to remember the first time he speaks here. Let's see. He pitied Luthien and sought her out, so he became involved with the quest for the Silmaril. Speaking for the first time, he told her of a way to escape and then accompanied her.
And for the first time he spoke, giving her counsel. Yeah, devised a plan for the aid of Luthien. And coming at a time of night, he brought her cloak. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're right.
Yep. So, anyways, just kind of neat how he... Where was it? That's not the forest. That's later on when they're on their way to Sauron's Isle.
Yeah.
Or at Sauron's Isle, I think, maybe. I can't really tell.
The second time or the first time?
The first time. The first time.
I think the first time, you're right, is when they're... Yeah, it's when she's held captive.
Okay.
She's held captive and she, he's sitting there with her.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And he even allows her to ride upon him like a horse, which is a big deal for him because he's a big deal. He's not just a normal beast. He's he has a connection to Valinor.
He does.
Right?
He was sent by them.
Yes.
I mean.
Yeah. I mean, he's a special, special dog.
He's a special.
Yes, he is.
Yeah. And it's great because, you know, he has these powers and he is, I mean, even at this point, so to kind of get
and he has a prophecy too. He has a destiny.
He does. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it's just neat though that he's with these elves and he is able to realize like, you know, yeah, they're not treating her right. This is not cool. Even though he had befriended.
That was his master.
Celeborn. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It was time to move on to Luthien.
Yep.
And he actually protects them from Sauron.
Yeah, dude.
Takes him down.
Yes, he does. By the throat.
Because Huon goes in there and just lays waste to the other wolves.
Yes, that's
like
right.
Like in the werewolves and stuff.
That's right.
And
yep.
They actually go back and they tell Sauron, you know, that Luthien had came. And she goes down into the pit and is with Beren. And one of the wolves like limps back or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he takes, and so Sauron decides, here's what I'll do. I'll take him on. Yep. And I'll take the form of this
of the werewolf. One who is, yes. Yeah, yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, he's got Sauron by the neck by the time he gets down there and tries to, you know, take him on.
Pretty
what was
amazing.
He thinking?
I don't know.
You know, I don't know. So, anywho, but where are we at? So Beren is...
We're about there.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's see.
So he... Yeah, so he kind of... He has Sauron... So they go to the bridge. Well, hang on a second. So Finrod and Beren are in the... This is where that comes up where he saves Beren.
Okay,
so Finrod is about to watch Beren be eaten. He can't stand it. He jumps out and attacks this werewolf.
Oh, that's where it happens.
Creature, yeah.
He breaks out of his chains.
Yeah, breaks his chains, right? And fights this thing to the death, kills it, and then he's, you know, kind of dying, and Beren is there mourning. That's when Luthien and Huon get there.
Yeah.
Sauron sends out wolves to attack Huon, but he kills them no problem at all.
Yep.
And then, Sauron comes out and takes him on, and Huon like doesn't even bat an eye, takes him down, holds him by the throat, and
holds him there so Luthien can have, you know, kind of talks.
She's like, you're either gonna submit this to me. Yep. Or we'll send you back as a spirit to Morgoth, and you can explain to him what happened.
Yep. Yeah.
And you'll be a little, you know, you'll be...
Exactly.
Yeah, it's brought low in front of your master. So you want to do that?
He doesn't want that.
Right. So he submits his island, and then he, like, shapeshifts into a bat.
Yeah.
Vampire type thing, and flies away to Angband.
Old Dracula.
That's right. And then... Luthien comes to Beren, and I love it says in there, like, you know, Beren was in such grief and mourning that he didn't even notice Luthien approaching him.
Yes.
Right, which is huge for him because he's like, he's like obsessed with her. She's like what.
Well, you imagine
he and
Finrod probably really bonded on this trip and being down there and to seeing just the honor in which he, you know, fought and protected him and held up his oath.
Yeah.
You know, I think Finrod knows too when he sets out, he's like, this is a quest in which I will probably die.
Yeah, not come.
We are literally walking up to Morgoth, and we're going to try to take a Silmaril.
Yeah.
I'm dead.
Yeah.
You know?
We all are. Right. And in that way, it kind of parallels the whole quest in Lord of the Rings, too, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It seems doomed.
From the start.
It seems like, you know, you're walking to your death, pretty much, or heading, you know, right into evil and darkness. And, yeah, it, interesting little parallel there. So, anyway... Luthien and Beren, they bury Finrod. And it's interesting. I forgot this connection. He built this tower on this island.
Yes.
So Finrod was being held captive in the tower that he had built long ago.
Oh.
And then so, because the interesting thing is that when they bury him on this island, and it's like it's been reclaimed for Finrod.
Okay,
it's this full circle thing. You know, Sauron had taken it, and
because Luthien gets she takes dominion over
yeah
over that that's yeah. So Sauron had to give that up.
Yep, yep. Yeah. And so it's kind of this full circle that comes back to Finrod, and it's like something he once built, he is now, you know, buried there.
Yeah.
And then they go free together. Wow. So.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So let's move on a bit here.
Let's keep going.
Let's see. It kind of goes back, doesn't it, to Thanor's sons, right? Celegorm and Curfrin.
Yep.
They end up coming across Luthien again, right? Is that correct?
Yes.
And they're trying to kill Beren.
Yeah. They ride Curfrin, it's Celegorm that rides his horse straight for Beren.
Yep.
Yep.
And then Huon betrayed him, stood between them.
Yes, he does.
He says, I don't think so.
Yes, he does.
You're not going to go up against Huon. He's a boss.
He's a monster.
So, so they have a fight, and it is what it is, and they go their separate ways. Huon kind of chases him off,
And Luthien doesn't let Beren kill Curufin.
Yeah, nope.
That's something interesting, too. She says, you know, not a good deal. Not a good deal.
Well, there's too much bloodshed going on between them and Morgoth. It's like, you know, there's no reason for them to...
Kill your own kin kind of thing, right? Yeah. Even though Beren's not, but it would be for Luthien kind of a deal. Yeah, so, yeah.
Dude, this is so cool. So, the next day they kind of take off, and he is... I don't have this in the book, or I don't know where it's at, but he sings to Luthien as he rides, right?
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that right? And so it's just kind of neat that he's... singing.
He's singing to her.
To her.
Yeah.
You know? And she heard him, you know, and just interesting. So, but as they get closer, they've got to take disguises, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
So, they again, the disguises come back. First, we were a bunch of pack of orcs trying to convince Sauron that it was interesting. What I remember from that part, too, that we kind of glossed over, the orcs didn't report back in the right way.
Right.
And that's how Sauron kind of caught him and brought him before him.
Where is the part? Have we gotten to the part two where Beren decides he's going to leave? Is that the singing part?
Possibly. Yeah, I think so. Yes. In Huron, because does his second talk. He speaks for the second time.
Yes, because he doesn't want Luthien to follow him.
Yeah.
Remember, he wants to go do this on his own. He doesn't want peril to... befall her, and his song is about her.
Did Huon not speak to him and warn him that their fates were intertwined? Isn't it there's this reason that said that, like, you know, either way, he is somehow convinced that it doesn't matter, you know, whether she comes or doesn't come, you know.
Huon spoke with words, and he counseled Beren, saying, "From the shadow of death, you can no longer save Luthien, for by her love, she is now subject to it. You can turn from your fate and lead her into exile, seeking peace in vain while your life lasts. But if you will not deny your doom, then either Luthien, being forsaken, must assuredly die alone, or she must, with your challenge, the fate that lies before you, hopeless yet not certain. Further counsel I cannot give, nor may I go further on your road, but my heart forebodes that what you find at the gate, I shall myself see." Oh my gosh, dude! I just got the significance of that.
Yeah.
Okay. All else is dark to me. Yet it may be that our three paths lead back to Doriath.
Yep.
And we may meet before the end. Wow.
He's wise.
He is, dude, man.
Huon is wise.
And if dogs could talk, that's exactly what they'd say.
They would. They'd be speaking some wisdom.
Jeez, Lord. Okay, so that's where they kind of part. They sort of part ways, and he says, I can't, you know, it's not my path. And they go, and so...
So Beren and Luthien take off.
They do, and they...
To Morgoth.
And they go disguised, right?
Yep. Up to Angband.
Crap, what is it...
They're disguised as?
Yeah, he's a wolf, right? He's the Beren is the wolf, and Luthien is the bat.
Right, so yeah. Sauron's messenger, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
I think they make the mistake of, like, one of those two is dead, the werewolf or something. Right? Isn't that what their mistake is when they first get to Morgoth? I can't remember exactly.
That's a great question.
I think as they get there, they're tipped off.
Yeah. Because Karkaroth was doubtful, for he had, you know, heard that Dragluin was dead.
Yep.
Yes. That's okay. Right. That's right.
Just kind of reading ahead here. See if there's.
But then Luthien puts them to sleep, right? She sings a song and puts them to sleep, and that's how they come into Morgoth's nethermost hall.
Yeah, I mean, you know, she basically, I think Baron is exposed, and she basically then just says, oh, I'm going to expose myself.
See if you can stay awake during this song.
Yeah, I am Luthien, and he talks about he's heard of her.
Yeah.
You know, the land has heard of her great beauty and her dancing and her whatnot. And so, you know, he kind of wants to, like you had said earlier on, I'm going to see this out, and then when she's done, I'm going to own her, take her, you know.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it says. Something like he has a plan.
Yeah,
in his mind, he sets his mind to an evil plan to break her.
Yep.
Right. He's got it all in his mind. He knows how it's going to go down, and so his vanity and his pride kind of are his downfall here.
Yes.
Because Luthien starts to sing, and she vanishes.
Yeah.
Right. And this whole time, Beren is he kind of snuck under and sat underneath as this werewolf, wolf, whatever he was, under Morgoth's throne.
Oh, you're right. Kinda so he's asleep. Not completely exposed.
No.
Is he?
It might have been her. Was it her?
Maybe she was.
Yeah.
I can't remember. So. Yeah.
She kind of vanishes, right? And then she continues singing this song, and everyone in this room, all his servants, fall asleep.
Yeah.
And slowly but surely he does too. I love the description of how it says like his head starts to fall heavy and his crown leaned forward. And then before
the
you know it,
the weight of the Silmarils were carrying him forward.
Yes. And then before you know it, boom, he's like literally on his stomach on the ground.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's when Baron kind of shapeshifts back.
Yeah.
He forgot about the knife.
Yeah.
The dagger that did he take from Curathim?
Kelegorm.
Kelegorm.
Yeah.
Right? So he takes this knife, Angrist is what it's called, which sounds a lot like Orcrist. Yeah. Kind of cool. Probably brother, sister, sword. I don't know.
Yeah.
Takes the dagger. He slices the Silmaril off.
Yep.
Right?
Out of his creep. Pries it out, I think. I imagine it as prying. Okay. I don't know.
And part of the. And his knife breaks, and part of it.
Yeah, but it didn't break on the first one. He had the one out. He was done. He could have walked away.
Oh, yeah, and he goes for the other ones.
I'm going to take all of them. There's three of them.
Which is some fate there, too, isn't it?
What are you doing, man? You've got the one.
This was your promise.
Are you getting ahead of yourself off here?
Pride. Yeah.
Maybe he thought he could, whatever. Yeah. I don't know. But he goes for the second one. Blade breaks,
and it
swipes across his cheek and cuts Morgoth and wakes him up.
Yeah, yeah.
And they are like... Yep. Bats out of hell.
Yep.
They
flee to get out there. And at this point, Luthien is obviously she's exhausted, right? She says her powers were spent.
Yep.
And so they have to kind of face Karkaroth. Long story short, he bites off Beren's hand.
Oh, right. But
what did I skip?
Well, no, I think the cool part is Karkaroth doesn't really know what happened in there.
Yeah.
And so when Beren holds up his hand, He's trying to fake. It's a complete bluff.
Yeah.
To command him to stay.
Yeah.
It's almost like this power.
Yeah, with the power of the Silmaril. He kind of holds it up, right? Yeah.
Well, and it's also, you know, I think the way I read it is that Luthien is also there too. And so he doesn't necessarily know what's going on.
Or right.
But, you know, he sees the Silmaril. I think that's the kind of the giveaway.
Yeah.
Is that, oh, that's not good. I'm taking that back. And then he, you know, bites his hand off.
And then it...
Burns him up.
Burns his insides, and he just takes off on a tear.
Yeah,
and just starts running. And it said like everything in his path was pretty much destroyed. Started burning his insides out, and
he had a hunger and a thirst. It says, you know, he wanted to just eat and devour and consume.
Yeah,
the Silmaril wanted it; just needed to be fed. And it is crazy because when they finally find him, they get all the way back, and
the eagles take them.
Yeah, the Eagles take him back. And
they pass by Gondolin.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool.
Crazy.
The hidden city, like a green
jewel.
So
crazy. Yeah, you know, and he gets back to Thingol, though, Luthien's father. And
I love this part, dude.
Proclaims.
It's in my hand.
It's in my hand, man. Quest is completo. I will take your daughter.
And he's kind of angry. Thingol's kind of...
Yeah, he's kind of like, what are you talking about?
He's like, sure.
And he holds out his hand.
Holds up the dagger, and then he holds up his other... And it talks about how his name's changed to the one-handed.
Yeah.
And some other like elvish word for that, right?
Right, right.
And it says like when he sees his sees his one hand is gone, he kind of laughs and is sort of disarmed a little bit. And yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I don't know. Is yeah.
So it's it's a wild story, but he
it's not over yet.
It's not over though, because I mean they still need the Silmaril, and they Karkaroth is running around with it in his stomach, consuming people.
That's right.
They find him at
Galduin.
Yeah,
the
they
falls
do.
There.
Yeah, and he's drinking that water, right?
Yeah, that's right. To kind cool him,
to cool
his stomach. Yeah, yeah.
And so this is when Huon comes back.
Man.
Thank goodness.
Unbelievable.
And,
unbelievable.
Yeah. And so actually Thingol, Baron, some other folks get together and they're going on the hunt for Karkaroth.
Yep.
And yeah, they Huon ends up taking him on. He ends up killing Karkaroth and is mortally wounded.
Yep.
You know, and dies.
Yep.
So
speaking the third time, right? He says farewell to Beren.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Beleg is the one who takes the Silmaril from his belly, gives it to Beren, rousing him. You know, achieves this quest. He hands it to Thingol, right? And he wins Luthien, right?
You know, we skipped though is that he actually allows Beren to marry Luthien before.
Yeah, that's right. Before, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
He wants him to marry
right
him.
There.
He's impressed.
Yep.
You know, and
how could you not be?
No, seriously.
Yeah.
I know. It's like, whoa. I mean, you've at least taken the Silmaril, you know, you've loosened it and it's now within their grasp.
Yeah.
So
and then now you have all this stuff with Mondos, dude. And you got to help me with this.
Yeah.
Like with the eventual
where do they go?
Are they like
the gift of man?
Yeah, yeah, right.
So Baron dies.
Right.
He and Huon were both kind of hurt in the fighting, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Lives are lost. And what actually happens to the Silmaril first, though?
He gives it to Thingol.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where does it go from there?
Thingol hangs on to it, puts it around his loincloth. I don't really know.
Are you... Let me just take a quick look here because...
Don't believe me there? Or?
No, I'm just kind of like, what?
It's not about that anymore.
No. It's just, where does it go after that, you know? Thingol's doom. Let's see. Yeah, I don't know.
Baron was aroused by the touch of the Silmaril, and it held it aloft and bade Thingol receive it. Now is the quest achieved, he said, and my doom full wrought. And he spoke no more.
Yeah. Does it say anymore? You just look for where it says stuff about the Silmaril. Because now what happens is Luthien actually, I think she goes and pleads before the halls of Mandos. And once she sings a song of just straight sadness, man.
Yeah.
You know, and mourning. And
it moves them, right?
Yeah, it really moves them. And I think Manwë, one of the Valar, give her the option of staying there. And going to a place in which she could, all that memory, all that sorrow and hurt would just go away. She'd never remember it.
Yep.
Or she could give up her...
Could be immortal.
Yeah, she could give up her mortal life and go
nothing
take a mortal life.
Nothing more about the Silmaril.
No, okay. And then go with Baron and live out another life one more time.
Yeah.
And they did.
Yep.
They lived, and he said he couldn't guarantee them happiness, couldn't guarantee them anything.
Right. Yeah.
Just another life, you know, a mortal life.
Yeah.
And yeah. So
crazy.
They do.
So kind of setting the precedent, I guess, for what Aragorn and Arwen have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yep.
Wow. Beautiful story, man.
Yep. Oh, man. Gosh, dude. Hobbit's Guide.
Hobbit's Guide. Hobbit's Guide Home. That was fun, though.
Yeah, there's a... Yeah, it's interesting. It's a good story.
That was a good... I think we did a good job of kind of
there's
summarizing.
So much more,
there's so much more.
It's radical. You almost feel like... We almost are like apologetic because we, you know...
Well, just the lines that are in there and the couple of songs.
You're right, though. Once we go to do the reread, it's like you're going to want to read every line.
Absolutely.
You know,
dissect
and just
it
talk
like
about
we do.
Every line.
Yep, just like we do with the trilogy. Yeah.
So yeah.
Yep.
Okay. All right, though. I have some questions that I wanted to answer afterwards, so I'll go hunt down some of this other stuff on the Silmarils and different things, and we'll make some comments on the on the Patreon page and whatnot.
Do we get more of that Silmaril in later tales?
That's what I was wondering.
Okay.
I think we do.
Because there is one line, and I have no idea because I haven't read ahead, but there's one line that made me kind of think maybe... hold on, let me find it real quick.
Okay, here we go. Sorry. Actually, I think I just found it. So, and this is just on the Tolkien Gateway. The Silmaril retrieved from Morgoth's crown would bring about dramatic changes. The first change was the doom of Doriath. Unfortunately, in the naming of the Desire of the Silmaril, Thingol had awoken the curse of Mandos. Just as Finrod warned Beren, those who so much as name a Silmaril in Desire move a great power from slumber, namely the Oath of Feanor, which is what Feanor's sons, Celegorm and the rest of them are obsessed with, the Oath of Feanor. Before long, the sons of Feanor sent messages demanding the return of the jewel. Melian counseled Thingol to give it up and save Doriath from its doom. But Thingol was angered by the prideful words of the messages. And since the jewel had been won by the efforts of Beren and Luthien, he refused. Wow. He instructed the dwarves of Nogorod to reconstruct the... I don't know all these names. Naglamarin was something. So that it would hold the Silmaril. But the dwarves desiring the Silmaril and the... whatever it was that would hold them, would hold it for themselves, slew King Thingol and tried to escape with the treasure. Are you kidding me? Mm. Okay. Most of them were slain, and the Silmaril was returned to Melian. But it did not... but it did little to soothe Melian, and she was overcome with grief. Melian departed from Middle-earth and returned to Valinor, and the enchantment which had fenced Doriath from evil vanished in her absence. So this allowed for Doriath's eventual destruction by the sons of Feanor when they tried to reclaim the Silmaril from Dori. They failed, however, and the Silmaril was passed on to Elwing, Doriath's daughter. Eventually, the sons of Feanor tracked her down too, which led to the assault on the mouths of Sirion. Elwing still managed to escape with the Silmaril. Though Morgoth did not count the missing Silmaril as a great loss, it would soon result in his downfall. Elwing and her husband Arendil were guided by Valinor, were guided to Valinor by the Silmaril, and there Arendil pleaded with the Valinor to forgive the sins of the Noldor and put an end to the darkness. The Valar granted his plea, and the lone Silmaril was set in the sky as a star. The Valar assembled a mighty host in the War of Wrath, which resulted in Morgoth's final defeat.
And that's the rest of the Silmarillion.
That's the whole thing. Okay.
There you go, guys.
That's everything in a nutshell. I'm sorry. I had to know.
That's all right. Now we know.
I mean, because the crazy part is you think that there's three, and I've always thought this myself, and that, and there is more to it. Honestly, there's a whole lot more.
Oh, yeah.
Way more, friends. Little individual battles and stuff. But if you just follow that Silmaril and you get kind of the where it's going to go, the other ones really don't matter. It's Beren. That's why you said Beren and Luthien's story is so important. You know, and it's just kind of it's wild.
It really
absolutely
is.
Wild.
It really is.
So I mean, you get some big players in there. Galadriel is a part of all this stuff too. Yeah. She's involved. Yeah. You know, Celeborn is in there.
Yeah.
So it's some
crazy
cool stuff.
Crazy.
Okay, guys.
So what are we reading next?
Next month, we are doing Children of Húrin.
Children of Húrin.
Which God only knows what that's all about.
Mm-hmm.
You've read some of it more than I have.
Melkor and Túrin. Túrin's amazing. Túrin Túrinbar.
Yeah, yeah.
Bae.
Yeah.
He also fights...
Sad story, though.
Does he fight Glaurung, I think?
Big old dragon.
Yes. It is sad. Yes, it is.
Very sad.
A lot of confusion and... sadness in that one. So
guys,
a lot of
these
are sad
stories. 3:41 a.m.
We're just gonna stay up, I think, all night.
We love you guys. Just so you know.
Should we end this with Luthien dies?
God, what is wrong with you?
Frodo lives. Luthien dies.
No, I would say that they. We don't really know, man.
No, she dies.
Well, they all live.
She's mortal. She's mortal.
They all live in
the halls of Mandos.
The gift of Ilúvatar. They're out doing their own thing, exploring beyond.
Quidde quimbe!
Jesus. All right, guys.
That was fun.
Thanks for listening.
Next time, we'll be guided by a hobbit into what you just heard, Children of Húrin. And remember, Luthien dies.
Thank you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.